Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Mystery on the rocks, oh yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah. Mystery on the rocks, yeah.
Welcome to another episode of this special series of Mystery on the Rocks, the show where we take cocktails and unsolved mysteries, we jam them together, shake them up. I got distracted out the window and I couldn't finish the sentence. It's a podcast. Listen to it. Thank you.
I thought Zoom had frozen.
Oh, really? Because somebody walked outside the window, and this is the not the benefits, but the downside of doing something in my living room where it's like people move. I'm like, what's that? Oh, it's nothing. That's just people outside.
Don't
what's
worry
that?
About
that's...
it, Masood. It's just people.
So welcome. I'm Masood. With me, as always, is the fantastic Suze Kempner.
Hi.
And the amazing Chris Stokes.
Hi.
So, how are we?
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
Yeah?
Pretty good.
Pretty good. What are we drinking, guys?
I made myself a margarita.
It's beautiful. The colour of it looks a little like tan.
It looks a little.
Is that a margarita colour?
Looks greener. It looks worse than usual, Chris. That's not the colour
it looks
I'm
like
using.
Rusty piss. Yeah. No, why is it a little darker?
No, it's because, and before you all balk, it actually works, is I had no agave or simple syrup.
Mm-hmm.
So I used maple.
Piss.
Oh,
that's nice.
That's quite
nice. I actually think that's really nice.
Used a little bit of maple syrup, which is obviously a darker syrup. So it's made a sort of like a darker yellowy colour. Yeah.
Yeah.
Very nice.
I am annoyed that is, you know, been taken by Borat. Very nice. Like it is.
Very nice.
One of the nicest drinks I've ever had is a jalapeno margarita. Mm-hmm. That I had at a Mexican restaurant in London. And I thought, I'm going to make a jalapeno margarita. But do you know what you need for that? You need jalapenos.
Oh, no, that sucks.
Didn't have any.
You should have had some.
Chris, you should have stopped fucking about, got yourself some jalapenos. And then
you could have had
a. Why didn't you have any? You fucking. Because I was just thinking, like, when I make them, Chris, and it's very, very different to how you make them. God, I sound like a prick. I don't use simple syrup, but I'm definitely want to try it with maple syrup because I imagine that's a fucking whole other level.
Because you are meant to use syrup, aren't you? Or aren't you?
I mean, it really depends. I mean, this is the thing about, I think...
Because I've never made one. This is the first margarita I ever made.
The more I make cocktails, the less married I am to traditional recipes because it's whatever you fucking want. You know what I mean? Like, I think Suze has definitely taught me that.
It's tequila, orange liqueur and lime juice, right?
Yes, it's just those three. You can add simple syrup.
Which the recipe I found called for it, so I used maple instead.
Hmm. That sounds nice. It sounds like a nice
I think
twist.
It sounds really nice. I'm afraid I don't have a drink. I mean, I've got...
Suze forgot we were recording, listener.
I wrote down the recording for October the 7th, which is a month from now. But I would have been there. And Chris was like, oh, don't worry, if you're too busy, we can just do it Monday night. And I was like, I was not busy. I was lying in my bed. It's 3 p.m., by the way. The reason I was lying in my bed is I went out last night, came back here with three great mates, great pals.
Yeah.
And we got drunk on vodka and tonics till 5 a.m. Now, I say that, we also did a very experimental cocktail because eventually we ran out of tonic water, but there was still plenty of vodka. So what we did was topped up the vodka with cold water.
Oh, yummy. we,
that's like having a baked potato and making the filling like just crisps.
Well, we crunched them up, so there's a texture differential. In my head, though, you made the whiskey, you made the vodka water, and then you, the next morning, everyone left. You opened the fridge, and those Pepsis were in there. You're like, ah, fuck. We could have had.
It was literally in there.
Oh, fucking hell. Ah, shit.
We could have had
vodka Pepsis.
And me coming upstairs, going, Pepsi, okay.
What are you drinking, Masood?
This is a mojito. It's the weather. Sun's out.
So we've gone for classics then.
Yeah.
Sun's out. All three of us.
Runs out, suns out, runs out. Oh, yeah. Mm-mm-mm.
We've gone for classics. All three of us. The vodka water.
Vodka water. It's always a classic.
The tin of Pepsi.
No, we've gone proper classics.
So at this point, we've done Rasputin and we've done Anastasia, the execution of the Romanovs, which puts us in there in about 1918. So this time, I thought what I'd do is, because we're just out of the First World War now, so the Romanovs were executed, obviously, during the Russian Revolution, but World War One still had a few months to chug on.
Yeah.
So at the end of World War One, I thought it'd be a really good opportunity to have a look at The Merchant of Death.
The Merchant of Death?
Oh, okay.
Ooh, it's one of Shakespeare's lesser known plays.
Me going on stage.
Hey, hello.
Yeah, The Merchant of Death is a guy, man.
Yes.
Have you ever heard of Basil Zaharoff?
Yeah, I have, but I don't know why. Probably because I'm a white woman and I listen to a lot of true crime podcasts. But
Susan, I too listen to true crime podcasts, and
I see a fellow white woman.
Yes, I think I'm every white woman is my spirit animal. It's essentially. So I'm a basic bitch. That's what I'm saying.
It's amazing. I hate basic as an insult because it basically just means like, this person likes stuff that's popular.
Yeah. Exactly. I love stuff that's popular. That's why it's popular, because it's great.
Yeah. What Basil Zaharoff, why am I thinking he had something to do with selling weapons and...
The reason you think that, Suze, is because that's exactly what he did.
It is the podcast I listen to. He's often like, I think the podcast was like, he's one of the worst men who's ever lived.
Yeah, he is known as the most evil man that ever lived. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yes.
One of his names is, because I think there's probably some people that run him close, maybe even supersede him.
There's a whole bunch.
I could think a few. I could name them off the back of my hand.
I heard a podcast the other day called The Worst Nazi. I was like, wow. What a selection.
Yeah.
And he does sound pretty bad. He basically masterminded the execution of pretty much all the Jews in Poland. That was his thing. And he loved it.
See, so. I think Mengele, if we're going to talk just quickly, Mengele is high up there on the worst Nazis.
Mengele is like a kind of sadist that no one could match.
Absolutely, yeah. It's that kind of like whistling on his way to work that I'm like, Jesus.
He's like, I can't wait to inject dye into a child's eye.
Anyway, sorry, Chris, you were saying, so he's oft cited as the most evil man.
Yeah, okay. Now, I thought we'd pop him here in the series.
just
here. He's got a few years to live. So this isn't when he died. This point chronologically, like about 1918, 1919. And it's also like he'd already been doing quite a lot of stuff before then. No one really knows when or where he was born because he made sure that mystery surrounded him. So, because he was up to no good. So
it sounds like you're reading this off the back of a DVD.
Because he was up to no good.
He was up to no good. No one knows where he's from.
Mystery surrounded this evil guy.
best guess, he was born in 1849 in what was then the Ottoman Empire. Anatolia,
right.
In part of the Ottoman Empire. He fell into sort of like little nefarious things, like he was a brothel tout.
I'm pleased to say that I don't find him attractive.
Oh, no.
First on this podcast.
We like all manner of psychos, but it seems like he's... Well,
he also, when he was younger, worked for the fire brigade in Constantinople.
And was he Greek?
This is in the 1800s. Well, he was born in the part of the Ottoman Empire.
Yeah.
And part of what he would do, and it's nebulous as to whether or not he masterminded this plan, but the Constantinople Fire Brigade would set fire to buildings to generate their own work. And also as a kind of like protection racket.
Right.
They're like, you fuck with us, we'll put your building on fire. We won't put it out. That's right.
Fuck you, pay me.
But he eventually became known as the Merchant of Death. And the reason for that is he became the world's biggest independent arms dealer.
Okay.
Oh. Now, I sort of have a question about him and kind of a lot of people surrounding that. It's like, this is Ottoman Empire time. Is this because of, like, there's not a lot of records being kept? That's why no one really knows when he was born, kind of like. Or is this because of, like, they burnt a lot of... Because I know they burnt, like, they sacked the Library of Alexandria.
Well, this is interesting. He, in 1927.
Yeah.
So this is, like, ahead of time from when we're there. And at the point where he's probably about 80 years old.
Okay.
He spent 2 days burning every record he had of himself.
Wow. Two days. That's a long fucking time to burn and everything.
Also,
about
of course, this piece of shit lived to like nearly 90.
Yeah, my mum says I've got a feeling he was like 86 or something. 87 he was. He died. He died in 1936 in Monaco. Okay.
My mum kind of in Monaco. So he was wealthy,
comfy,
was he?
And rich in his bed.
But my mum would always say, when people die old that are evil, it's like, you think like what was it? She'd be like, the good die young, but if you're bad. You will keep going. You will to suffer. I was like, did they though? Do they suffer? Because apparently Hitler's a farmer in fucking Argentina.
110 years old. 110 he really years made old. Up for what he did.
Still farming. Hello! He still has the goal to have Hitler on his little mailbox.
Good evening!
So he lived to be 87 in Monaco.
He burnt all his records.
Like, so we're kind of getting ahead of it. I did toy with the idea of actually waiting until we hit 1930s before I spoke about him. But I feel like the end of World War One is a really good time to slot him in.
Right.
Absolutely.
I feel like also, if we're stretching the definition, he counts because not like he is a... He generated this air of mystery around him.
Gotcha.
But in terms of like burning records, it was always really convenient if anybody ever asked him anything. Because the thing is that you don't get to his, like, he had wealth later in life, and he was obviously the world's biggest arm dealer. You don't do that without people knowing you. So when asked questions about his past, conveniently, his birth documents were destroyed in a fire. Or, you know, do you know what I mean? Like, there was never any trace of him. There was always a story as to what had happened, as to why there was no trace of him.
It also seems like it's pretty mad because, like, back then, it seems like those were, like, strange formalities as opposed to, like, legal binding documents that you need in order to get a job. Whereas, like, then it's like, oh, they burned. Everyone's like, you're here now, so it's fine. Like, there's no, like, no one's going to freak out if you don't have a birth certificate. Whereas now it's like...
So it's a sort of, like, try and explain how bad he was.
Yeah.
He was known as the wickedest man in Europe and also the most evil man in the world at some points. Kind of like to go back to maybe Rasputin, who we've just covered, who, was probably not a saint, but his air of like demonic evil was exaggerated.
Yeah.
Whereas Zaharoff's was probably played down.
Yeah, see, I feel like Rasputin was just kind of fucking around. He kind of like got away with it, and he's like, "Hey, how's it going? Everybody loves Rasputin."
Like Rasputin basically cared about Rasputin, didn't he?
Yeah.
And actually, he wasn't out to court. He wasn't like, "I love destruction. I love chaos." Yeah, he was just like, "I love living a good life. Yeah, the good stuff: wine, women." Like,
yeah, I want to eat everything, and I want to fuck everything.
Sometimes, same time.
Sometimes interchangeable. I fuck food and I eat women. But like, yeah, whereas this guy...
Can we quote you on that in the press, Rasputin?
Ah, why not? And draw a picture of me like this. And he like hangs about over two women. He's like... It seems like, whereas this guy, at least as we're entering into him, it feels like he's a pretty fucking... Hey, hello. It feels like he's a pretty grim guy.
Yeah, so he is most likely the real-life inspiration for Blofeld. In the James Bond.
Oh my God. Okay, I can see. I can immediately see that because I've got pictures of this guy.
Because, so Ian Fleming worked in British intelligence.
Yes.
Sort of like, I think, not necessarily exclusively in World War II, maybe even leading up to World War II as well. And will have heard stories and like known about Zakharov. Now, this is probably the most damning indictment for what an evil piece of shit he was, because it's named after him, this practice. It's called the System Zakharov. Do you know what that is?
Okay, no.
The System Zakharov,
yeah,
is basically where an arms dealer sells arms to both sides in a conflict that arms dealer has helped provoke.
Fuck.
Oh, what? I'm playing both sides.
So he's doing the same firefighter shit where he's starting the fires. And
so
then he's
back when he was younger and was taking part in this sort of like setting fires while he was in the fire brigade, it's basically then just blown up on a global scale. So why are we talking about Zakharov at this point in time? Because there are some that believe he was pulling the strings behind the initial conflict of World War I between Serbia and... Serbia and who was it?
Oh,
was it Austria and Serbia?
Yeah. I think it was... World War One, like, how World War One got started is the most insane thing, because at the time, in 1914, see if this sounds familiar, they were like, it's going to be impossible to have a global conflict because we live in such a global economy now. So it just won't happen. And then it went from that to everyone going like, we live in a peaceful world. 2 weeks later, thousands and thousands of people were being mown down by then modern weaponry. So it makes sense that it took a fortnight for
which, by the way, modern weaponry Zakharov helped make and sell.
So he was a so he was literally a mastermind of
Let's rewind back to the 19th century. He was one of the top, probably the top salesman for Vickers, which was the British firm that made weapons.
I thought you were going to say like top salesman for like fucking, I don't know, Tupperware at the time, just like, hey!
Holding firearm parties.
Oh my God, see how you feel. Wow, yeah, that's really good.
Sitting around in the living room.
And you tell five friends, and then they tell five friends.
He's like the dude in Easy Andy in Taxi Driver. He's like, he just brings in a bunch of guns and he's getting Travis Bickle to try them all. He's like, just hold that in your hand. That's a beautiful little gun. So,
he worked for Vickers for about 30 years and he was their general representative abroad. And he seemed to sort of like quite enjoy the reputation of being known as the armaments king, because he was making a literal killing, selling.
Yeah. Making a killing. Like, and he was like, I bet that was his favourite joke as well. I make a killing.
But even then, this is the point where he was making a name for himself. He was asked, at this point is when people were starting getting to know him and asking him questions. He'd be like, you asked for his birth certificate. Oh no, but a fire destroyed the church registers. You searched for a document concerning him in the archives of the Vienna War Office and the folder's there, but the documents vanished. And things like that. He was basically leaving no trail.
Fucking hell, fuck.
He was working for Vickers, but he was helping to sell the Maxim gun, you know, the machine gun.
Oh, we covered this.
We didn't cover it in an episode. We covered it on YouTube, but there is that mystery about Maxim and the doppelganger. But that selling, that demonstration of the Maxim gun was covered in the press by H.G. Wells.
Fucking hell. Everybody's at it.
Basil Zakharov was, not only was he incredibly wealthy, but he also had a lot of influence.
Yeah.
Apparently, he carried a gun since he was seven years old. On his person.
Fuck it out.
The writer Osbert Sitwell
good name. Great name.
Apparently wrote one of the most perceptive descriptions of Zaharov ever written. And he called him both evil and imposing. And this is a direct quote from Sitwell. The beaky face, the hooded eye, the wrinkled neck, the impression of physical power and the capacity to wait. I find that terrifying. Do you know what I mean? Just like it implies this sort of like malevolent patience that I'm not keen on.
Yeah.
He was in outlook merely a super croupier. And once I heard him introducing himself to a millionaire friend of mine with the startling phrase, "I am Sir Basil Zaharov. I have 16 millions."
Fucking hell.
Sick. But he was a multi millionaire.
Yeah, and like not just in then money now. By like a millionaire then. He had millions then.
Yeah.
He was Bezos, but instead of running Amazon, he was just like straight up I'm playing both sides.
I'm killing everybody. It's all good. And I don't need a dick-shaped rocket to prove myself either. Okay.
I bet he'd love to have gone inside.
He would have loved it though. In my head, though, he's getting played by Toby Jones. I don't know why. I know that's not what he looks like, but Toby Jones is playing him.
Toby Jones would do a good job.
Actually, who would I cast as Zaharov in the film of Zaharov's life?
Ooh.
I reckon I'd go for Christoph Waltz.
Oh, yeah. That's a bingo.
That's actually really good. Yeah.
I like it. Or do we make it a wacky comedy? We cast Eddie Murphy. He's like, "My name's Zaharov."
In a dual role, he plays Archduke Franz Ferdinand as well.
And doesn't have any lines. He's just got a crazy makeup job. Yes, and he's in his carriage and he goes, "Hmm?"
He whites up. He whites up for.
He's black as Zaharov, but he whites up to play Ferdinand.
That's fucking ridiculous.
Zaharov's past is sort of like all.
Which he's helped create.
But you can piece things together. So some people have been... So, like, for example, at some point in his late teens, so this would have been in the 1860s, he left Turkey to go to Western Europe.
Okay.
And he later in life did admit to having a general education in London and Paris, which is vague, but he picked up the language from somewhere.
Yeah.
So by the early 1870s, he was in Britain. So he was in his 20s at this point. And in 1872, he did marry. He married an Emily Burroughs, who was the daughter of a Bristol builder.
Yeah.
Wow. Was it like Thatcher era builder? So he's like, loads of money.
No, it was the 1870s.
Oh, right.
but was he a rich builder or was he just some random builder?
He wasn't that well off at this point either.
No, he just started.
This was before... Yeah. He was young, he was in love. So, but shortly after this, he was arrested in Belgium on charges of embezzling £7,000.
Jesus.
Okay. And so he actually became the first subject, against his will, of a newly signed extradition treaty between Belgium and Britain. And then he stood trial at the Old Bailey.
Okay.
And he was set free on a promise of good behaviour.
I'll be good. It's okay.
Hey, no worries.
I pinky swear I'll be very good.
After that, he went to Cyprus, which was still under Turkish rule.
Yes.
Okay.
And he used a lot of aliases. He set up as a storekeeper and an unscrupulous contractor. Hmm. Now, Greek Prime Minister Stephanos Skoulidis, who became Prime Minister in 1915, he said that during these years, Zaharov was first hired as an arms salesman and he became Balkan representative for a small Swedish firm. Whether that's true or not, he eventually found his way back to Britain after Cyprus passed to English control after 1878.
Right.
And in 1883, he ended up being established in Galway, where he posed as a count. He worked as a...
Yes!
Laugh it up, guys, because
that's a title he kept with him. He was a count.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Is that how easy it is? He's like,
He wanted to be a count, and then we'll get to this later on, but eventually his title was recognised. And that is part of a plot of one of the Bond novels, and Blofeld wants to be recognised as a count.
What?
So, that's fucking mad.
Anyway,
that's crazy.
He worked as a shipping agent, and then he was sent death threats because he was persuading local girls to emigrate in search of factory work in Massachusetts.
What?
So then, he was given 24 hours to leave the country.
You cunt. It's cunt.
He went to the United States.
I think
you're
fine. It's cunt.
I see 10 atrocities.
Yeah, they appear to have misspelt count on this form. No, you're supposed to get out.
Get out.
Do you reckon then at the end of his life, where they recognised his title, they were like...
You're like, his ultimate prank is such a good prank. Yeah. Such a good goof.
They're missing an O.
He was given 24 hours to leave Ireland. He went to America himself.
Massachusetts.
And then he started a career in the railroad business because it was booming at that point.
Ah, yes.
And then it turns out that apparently there was a Count Zakharov who in Utah in 1884, he claimed to be in possession of 4 black diamonds that played a celebrated part in the Turco-Russian War. And then a year later caused a small scandal in Missouri by associating with Pearl Clifford, who was a sort of like infamous madam.
Right.
I bet she's fun.
Yeah.
And that's while he was working as a superintendent of a local railway sleeping car company.
Ooh.
It's when you say incident though, in my head it's like an incident in the street, like everybody saw it. She's like, unhand me, and he's like, and I'm a count. Don't you know I'm a count?
Get this. He kept going under the title Count Zakharov. And they've established, they reckon this must be the same bloke.
Yeah.
All right. It's a slightly different name, but he was known to use pseudonyms. Apparently, he then promoted himself to Prince Zacharias Basilius Zakharov, and he married the New York heiress, Jeannie Billings, because of the fact that she was worth $150,000.
Yeah.
And then he found himself the subject of a transatlantic police hunt when an expat from Bristol denounced him as a bigamist. Because remember, he was still married woman in Bristol.
Oh, probably her dad.
They're like, that's bigger me. He's like, yeah, it's bigger you.
I'm a count.
He was a real cut up.
There's a quote here. And by the way, I recommend sort of like there's an article on Zakharov from in the Smithsonian magazine, which sort of like lays all of this out in a really... neatly chronological order.
Oh, cool. Okay.
So the Omaha Daily Bee gives a good summary of what Zakharov's methods were at this point. This is a direct quote from the Omaha Daily Bee. He maintained a high social position by means of letters from prominent society people which purported to be genuine and had a library full of documents which he claimed were written to him by European dignitaries. He claimed to be a nephew of Prince Gortshakov and told a remarkable story of his banishment by the Tsar. At one time, he created a considerable commotion among the set here in which he moved by threatening to go abroad and fight a duel with a Prussian prince who had dared to insult his mother. So he was flamboyant.
Yeah.
Mm. And sort of like probably saying things that were like, wouldn't lie about that. That's insanity.
Yeah.
Right. He did the big lie thing.
He definitely wrote all of this, right? Yeah.
After being outed as a bigamist, he then went back to Greece and the Ottoman Empire. And then during the 1880s, he was involved in promoting... Because do you remember when he was in Cyprus, he was working for a small Swedish firm?
Oh, yes, the small Swedish arms
firm. Which was run by an inventor called Thorsten Nordenfelt.
Hmm.
After going to America, Ireland and then America, then he ended up back in Greece and the Ottoman Empire. And it was then that he sort of like maybe fallen back into that because he started promoting Nordenfelt's 2 principal inventions. And they were... And this is probably where he struck gold. A multi-barrel machine gun and a steam-powered submarine.
A steam-powered submarine?
A submarine in the 1880s.
Oh, this is ringing a bell from my White Woman podcast that I was listening to. Something like he managed to create something that meant the submarine... It could fire torpedoes underwater, something like that.
Oh,
is that right.
Okay, so the submarines themselves... were incredibly expensive because obviously they were state-of-the-art and they were but they were useless. They were unstable underwater and they got so hot that the crews would just faint.
Oh, God. My worst nightmare would be to get this, though. Submarine. It just sounds awful.
Oh, Zakharov was such a good salesman that he managed to sell 6 of them. And the
get him on The Apprentice, mate. He's a fucking genius.
The machine gun, that was a viable weapon. But it was less modern and less efficient than its rival, the Maxim gun.
Ah, yes.
Oh, wow. So he was an ace marketer, like Elon Musk.
Yeah.
Great at marketing.
He overcame these obstacles too, because he managed to sell more of his own Nordenfeld machine guns in Italy and Austria than Maxim did of his.
Oh shit, okay.
Okay,
so this is where we get to, and I think maybe we can't gloss over it, so we'll talk about it now and then say in the next episode we'll go into the mystery of the Maxim machine gun.
Okay, cool.
Zaharov met Hiram Maxim and eventually got him into the service of Vickers. So it was through Maxim that Zaharov managed to inveigle himself into Vickers. Right. And this is where H.G. Wells comes in. Ah. And H.G. Wells wrote about it. So this is a direct quote from H.G. Wells. Maxim exhibited his gun at Vienna. When he fired his gun at a target and demonstrated its powers, Zaharov was just busy explaining to expert observers that the whole thing was an exhibition of skill and that only Maxim could fire the gun. And it would actually take years to train all the men to use it.
Oh, that's amazing.
Wow.
He's like, you need good skill.
Yeah. And he was like, Maxim's new machines, they were delicate and difficult to make, and you couldn't produce them in the quantities that we can of our Nordenfeld one.
Whoa. Your thing doesn't have to be better. You just have to slag off the
Exactly. And then Maxim, and this is again still H.G. Wells. Maxim, after tracing the initials of the Emperor upon a target, prepared to receive orders. No one placed any orders. He learned that the Nordenfeld was simple and strong. This gun of his was a scientific instrument unfit for soldierly hands, and his demonstration went for nothing.
Fuck. This fucking guy, man.
What do you think? What do you think Maxim did?
He went and talked to him. He's like, mate, you got to fucking help me sell this thing.
Exactly.
Like, you gotta fucking. He would have paid him on the spot. And be like, look, mate.
Well,
fuck off those.
It's actually
kind of genius.
It's actually more than that. Because of Zaharov's skill as a salesman or underhand sales tactics or whatever you want to call it, Nordenfeld and Maxim combined to form the Maxim Nordenfeld Company.
Oh fuck! So he just went like, right, we're coming together.
Yeah.
We're
gonna, and then after 1897, that became absorbed another one. It became Vickers, Sons, and Maxim.
Jesus.
And so
that's so wholesome.
Yeah.
Vickers, Sons. Oh, they sell guns. Right. Yeah, that's not good.
Like I say, in 1927, he, as an 80-year-old man, or approaching 80, like in his late 70s, burnt all of his diaries and records and stuff.
Mm. I just like, he's writing them. He's like, I might have to burn these later, but I'll keep writing them.
I don't remember this from my White Woman podcast, and yet I remember a submarine.
A French newspaper once offered $5,000 for a single page of his diaries.
Ooh. I mean, no one
around. Even though he got rid of his diaries, that apparently he chronicled everything in, that's why he burnt them.
Yeah.
You can still sort of like, he still crops up occasionally in the paperwork of Vickers, which now sits at the Cambridge University Library. And he starts to crop up increasingly at this point in the British Foreign Office archives.
Oh, okay.
These then show you his increasing wealth.
Yeah.
So between 1902 and 1905, he was paid £195,000 in commission, which is worth $25 million today.
Jesus.
And by 1914, he was active in Istanbul, Athens, St. Petersburg, Buenos Aires. He owned several banks. He lived in a French chateau.
Oh, my God.
Hold on. He owned several banks. Is that a thing that you could just do then? You're just like, I'm having that bank. That's
well, you
mine.
Could, or you could set a bank up.
You could.
Oh, should we do it?
Yeah, let's do it.
Mystery on the Rocks banking. Right. Hey guys, your money's safe with us because we'll spend it on only good stuff.
Yeah, we'll only get
margaritas.
Yeah.
I'm speculating to accumulate.
We're putting
I think
it on
my vodka water cocktail's really going to catch on.
We're putting it on the company. That's not how it works. You can't just spend people's money and put it on the company. No, it's a tax write-off. It'll be fine.
I'll be honest with you, Mr. Seed. I'm pretty sure that is what banks do.
That is what they do. Yeah, they
just put it all on the company. I'm playing both sides.
So he just, and the bank he started was Santander, the worst bank of all of them.
I have a vision for Monzo. Trust me, I'm a count.
I'm a count. That's on the billboard, him just like smiling and pointing like, I'm a count.
I thought
he
said he was an accountant, yeah. Not a count. Oh, awful business what I just did.
So he basically got super rich and just started like just making himself more rich.
Yeah, but also like, again, like this, his underhand
business tactics.
They didn't go anywhere. So Foreign Office records show that in 1912, he was instrumental in bribing Russia's marine ministry to divert government contracts to a local shipbuilding group in which Vickers had an interest.
Oh, fucking hell, okay.
So the guy had no morals. He was like just out for making money. That's why you had the system Zaharov, where he would sort of like engineer conflicts and sell weapons to both sides.
Okay.
Now, like what's his chops out of Yojimbo in the Kurosawa film
where he
plays he's the bounty hunter that plays both sides and kind of gets them to off each other and then so he can
Interestingly, Yojimbo means literally Hello James.
Oh right.
Oh,
it doesn't. Yo, what are you on about? Yojimbo.
Hey, well, it might do. Shut up, Chris.
You had me.
You can't goof us.
Yeah.
He's just
did
a goof.
Goof truth. Yeah.
We're the real goof dream.
Because I saw that film, I was supremely hungover one New Year's Day. And so I was like, should we put this on? I was like, all right then. And I was like, black and white. Put it on. And I was like, this may be the greatest film I've ever seen. It was very good. So he just pop in and play both sides. That's fucking crazy.
It's amazing. At the around about the same time, so this is sort of like just before World War One. Vickers mysteriously won a contract to supply light machine guns to the Russian army, despite the fact that its bid was almost 50% higher than one submitted by a local arms works. So basically, so a local arms works would say to the Russian army, "We could supply your machine guns for you, but obviously, Zaharov."
Yeah.
On behalf of Vickers, went in and said, we'll cost way, way more, but you'll take the order. So,
right, yeah. And they went, okay, then, cool, we'll do that, yeah. Let's have this guy. He seems all right. He's a count. He seems like a good guy. I trust him. I seem to trust him. I like the fact that he's wearing a cape. That's very cool. It's very in.
He's already got loads of money, so I doubt he's in this.
No, he's in it just to be an evil prick. I think this is his game now. Because it just seems like he's fucking around now.
It doesn't sound like I think he liked making money, obviously, but it doesn't sound like the same drive. Because like Bezos is obsessed with having the most money, but that's his main drive. Whereas this guy wants destruction.
He wants people to know that he's this. Yeah.
He loves that. Yeah.
Yeah. There were some papers that dated about 1917 during the First World War that were classified up until fairly recently. I think it was like 100 years thing. And they became declassified.
Yeah.
And these papers prove that the British government was in cahoots with Zaharov.
Jesus. Yikes.
So in 1916... to 1917, somewhere around then.
Yeah.
He, with the blessing of the British Prime Minister, who I think was David Lloyd George at the time, who has come up before, by the way, because our vanishing Victor Grayson had proof that David Lloyd George was selling honours. Zaharov involved himself in secret negotiations to drag Greece into the war on the Allied side, and also to persuade the Ottoman Empire to defect from the Germans.
Whoa, holy shit. Oh.
So he had authorization from David Lloyd George, and he had 10 million in gold.
Fuck, they're paying him in gold now?
That must have come from the British.
Fuck you.
Fuck me.
He travelled to Switzerland in a bid to buy Turkey out of the war, and this ended up establishing what would eventually become the State of Israel.
Wow. Holy shit. This fucking guy.
Right, right.
So, are you aware of the Balfour Declaration?
I mean, I'm aware of it, but, like, Suze, write an essay. No.
The Balfour Declaration came in November 1917, and it was basically a public pledge by Britain declaring its aim to establish a national home for the Jewish people in Palestine.
Okay, right. Yeah. I see.
And he was okay. Right.
This fucking guy, man.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
January 1918, $5 million was to be paid to allow a British submarine to secretly pass through...
Steam-powered?
The Dardanelles Straits, which is... that's Turkey.
Yeah.
So the submarine, British submarine, was supposed to go through there without anyone knowing and torpedo a couple of German warships and then go away again.
Right.
And a further $2 million was to be paid if the Turkish troops in Palestine were withdrawn north of a certain point. And the British government guaranteed not to do anything to the Turkish troops during that retreat and guaranteed that Palestine would not be annexed by Great Britain or incorporated into the British Empire.
Okay. Huh. So. Holy shit. This isn't like some conspiracy whatever.
No. This is all out in the open now, but it wasn't.
Fucking hell. Okay. I mean, this is fucking crazy.
It's one of those things that you hear about a guy like this and you go like, well, I should just be more brazenly an asshole.
So he went to try and persuade Greece to join the war and for the Ottoman Empire to leave the war, basically, because the Ottoman Empire were fighting with the Germans.
Mm-hmm.
But when he went to do that, he was intercepted at the border because people knew about him at this point. And he was strip searched. He was left standing in sub-zero temperatures for more than an hour by border police. He was 68 years old by this point.
I'm happy for them to do that to him. I mean, he's a pretty shitty guy. this is fairly paltry in comparison.
Hey, Count, you're freezing.
After that, he was intercepted at the border, strip searched, left standing in the cold for ages and ages and ages. So then he was like, I want something for this. From the British as compensation.
Yeah.
Now, he had a code name at this point because they called him ZZ.
That sounds like a Disney like fucking name for a mouse from Cinderella. ZZ. ZZ. So, okay, obviously his last name twice.
He wrote to the British demanding sort of compensation for this thing, but also because it was a clandestine operation, he wrote it in code. And what he asked for, this is his code for you better sort of like come good for me having to do this. He asked for chocolate for ZZ.
I need chocolate for ZZ.
Chocolate for ZZ, please.
ZZ needs a chocolate.
They knew what he meant by that.
Right.
George V, who was king at this point, did not want this to happen. But obviously, King George V wasn't head of government.
No chocolate for ZZ.
No. So Lloyd George, remember, who was just selling honours that may have had something to do with the disappearance of our vanishing Victor Grayson.
Yeah.
From season two. Lloyd George recommended the Knight Grand Cross to Zaharoff. And that enabled him to style himself for the rest of his life, Sir Basil.
Fucking hell. So he was like, yeah, fine, give it to him, make him a sir, it's all good.
Fiscal experts have estimated how much money World War I made Basil Zaharoff.
Oh, this is going to be one of those things that's going to make me sick.
Do you want to have a guess?
How much? Oh, a bajillion dollars. It's going to be insane, now money, right?
Not then money or now?
No, I think it's in then money.
Oh, in then money, he probably made... Then money, I think he made £1 billion in then money.
No, I don't think it would be as much as that.
Oh, really?
He made $1.2 billion.
Fuck.
What the fuck? I'm going to find out what
from
that
the Great War alone. He owned Monte Carlo.
What? He just owned it.
Monte Carlo was like a casino resort.
Yeah.
He was one of the owners of Monte Carlo.
What the fuck?
And that's where he died.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Oh my god.
And he was so happy and he owned it and he was like, I am dead and now, old and
his
like,
will
in this place.
At the time of his death, this is in 1936, so we're getting ahead of ourselves. His will was proved to be £193,103, which is less than $1 million at the time.
Yeah.
So, where did that money go? Was it hidden?
Yeah.
Did he spend it?
I think
Is it out there to be found?
What, like he turned it into gold and just buried it somewhere? Like some sort of crazy count? I mean...
Like a fucking dragon.
Like a weird old vampire? Like, I must hide my gold.
Oh my god. We must go and bury it in this volcano. Like a fucking dragon.
Like a fucking dragon, yes. They will call me Zavarov the Dragon.
So yeah, he was... he burnt all of his own personal documents in 1927, roughly... 10 years before he died.
Yeah.
And
see, he knew he was a piece of shit though. This is what's crazy. Yeah.
And also he would have had things on world leaders and enough that he was selling to both sides of a conflict and then not doing anything to stop that conflict or at worst egging it on.
Like so, one thing that big drug dealers do is they have these huge ledgers of all of their fucking accounts and stuff. It feels like he did the smart thing that every one of them should do before a trial. Like, just fucking burn it. Just burn it. Then they have no evidence. And he's
so,
like,
that stuff about him going to buy Greece into the war and the Ottoman Empire out of the war.
Did he just buy Greece?
If you go to... the National Archives website.
Yeah.
There are little sort of like scans of the actual documents, handwritten documents. He, in November 1915, you've got this here, Zaharov, he wrote to his friend and the director of Vickers, who was called Sir Vincent Kayard. And this note says, I'm reading it, if I had in hand the £1,200,000 I have given to Greece during the last 9 years, and if I were to add £300,000 to it, I could make Greece join the Allies and start fighting the Bulgars within 20 days.
Fuck me.
Oh my God,
he's like, all that is needed is to buy the Germanophile papers, 45 deputies, and on Frontier Commander. I don't know what that means, but...
You just buy people off, yeah.
It's clear that he was like going to bribe whoever it took to do this, and he was going to use the rest of the money to persuade the Greek government to declare war.
Jesus Christ.
Okay? I'm looking at it here. Yeah. It's all handwritten there. That's the offer. And then Kayard showed that letter to Lord de Bernon, who's quite influential. He didn't shy away from that. He took it to the government. And then a few days later, Kayard wrote back to Zav, and I'm reading this as well. He wrote back to Zav saying that key figures, including the Prime Minister, who David Lloyd George hadn't yet become Prime Minister. It was Asquith at the time.
Yeah.
They were keen on the idea, but they... were concerned about his plan to provoke a crisis on the Greco-Bulgarian frontier.
Right.
But that they weren't concerned on any moral basis. They just didn't want to face the risk that it might be traced back to them.
Fuck.
Regarding the underhand funding of pro-British factions within Greek politics, the British government had no such qualms. And Asquith wrote to Kayar to say that I've talked this matter, and this is it. This letter is here, handwritten from him. This is from Asquith, who was the Prime Minister at the time, just before David Lloyd George. Asquith wrote to Kayard to say, I have talked this matter over with the Chancellor of the Exchequer. Please let your friend go straight ahead. The sum named by him will be found by the government.
Fuck, what?
So he named his price, and the British government just paid him.
They're just like, yeah, let's just pay him. Just give it, we'll find the money. Just tax, I don't know, tax those idiots there. The ones who are working, tax them. Fuck them. This is insane.
It's unbelievable.
It makes you wonder. And the only reason, like, there's a couple of reasons why I wanted to do this as part of this series. First of all, I think the story of Basil Zaharoff is quite a good one.
It's fucking insane. Fascinating.
Yeah, yeah.
Second of all, I think he qualifies because he kind of like tried to generate a mystery around him.
Yeah.
His favourite thing ever would be like a podcast.
About me.
An episode
yeah.
about
and
him.
Third of all.
About the mysteries of him.
And it's probably no one, like, it probably is only for my benefit rather than anybody else's, is that it ties back to the Victor Grayson episode in such a way that I think it might solve it. Because if you remember, Victor Grayson vanished.
Yeah.
And he had this sort of like claims of corruption about selling honors.
Yeah.
But what if it was specifically about Zaharoff?
And they made
because
him disappear.
This happened. They gave him the honor.
Yeah.
That he then subsequently called himself Sir Basil afterwards anyway. But they gave him that honor. What was it called? The Knight Grand Cross.
Yeah.
Lloyd George gave Basil Zaharoff the Knight Grand Cross. That's kind of what Victor Grayson was getting at, wasn't it? He was sort of like, he's giving him, giving away these honours. What if it was to... But if it was to a legitimate supervillain?
Yeah, a prominent arms dealer. Fuck me. Mm.
That's a good reason to shut Victor Grayson up, isn't it?
Yeah. No one's going to miss it, and no one's going to tie him together, because they're like, fucking, you know, this documentation doesn't come out until right now, or recently anyway. Fucking hell.
It's mad. PPS, $1.2 billion. $1.2 billion is less than I thought. It was about $25 billion.
Still a lot
today. But that's made in the 4 years of that war. So
actually, I'm trying to work.
I don't know what his wealth was.
Maybe it was only in today's money, because were there such a thing as billionaires back then? Did anybody have the actual?
Probably
not. But I mean,
so maybe it was. Maybe it was $1.2 billion in today's money and not.
I don't know. Let me see. I'll just type in. When did the?
Because the idea of a billionaire—that's a fairly new thing, surely.
I feel like that's what are the.
Although I think Bill Gates has been a billionaire. I mean, I'm going back to the 90s, but I feel like he... 1916.
Who were I was going to say the Rockefellers were billionaires. Yeah. They were like the first billionaires. Yeah.
So it's not outside the realms of possibility that 20 years later he could have had a billion.
I think it's pretty easy.
Oh, yeah.
It's not like he looked at his bank account and he's like, nope, 1.2 billion. There we go. Like it was over that time.
Reading it again. It's not what he made in total. It's what he made from World War One.
So is that his turnover or his profit? If he's claiming it back,
yeah,
let's see.
4 years.
What's it?
Is it net or gross?
It's fucking gross.
I'm telling you, that's gross, mate. That's disgusting. I remember being at school. I think it was year six. So I'd have been about 10, and our teacher was talking about the lottery and what it meant to win that much money. So then he was like teaching us about how you get interest on money. And he was going, so if you win £10 million, look, this is what you would earn in interest just by having that sat in your bank. So that's how much. And he was showing like you then would have an extra $100,000 at the end of 1 year. And I remember sitting there going like, oh, that's too much money. I never want that's too much. It's scary. I don't ever want that much money. And I still feel a little bit like that. I'm like, that's crazy. Too much money is too much money. People like that have the opposite feeling, like it will never be enough money. And I can't get my head around it. And I think there is something slightly evil about wanting to own that much money.
Because it stops being about the money, doesn't it? It starts being about the status of like, I'm this person that can just... Because like the money is irrelevant almost, because you can't ever spend it. You can't ever do anything with it.
No, it gets to the point where you've got more money than you could ever spend. Like this guy bought
He bought a casino town. He didn't go out to the middle of fucking nowhere and build it out of nothing, or go to a fucking swamp and build it.
He didn't buy one of those crazy islands.
He bought the casino, the Monte Carlo casino.
Fuck me.
And then he turned it around so that it started making a profit again. Amazing. So he was raking that in.
It's amazing.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, this is it. He would have died with that little money in his will. But his fucking like legacy of money would have been elsewhere. It would have been deep, deep into some like the casino and stuff. You know?
He influenced Clemenceau, who was the Prime Minister of France from 1906 to 1909, and then again from 1917 to 1920. He influenced the French Prime Minister to ensure that the Treaty of Versailles included protection of Monaco's rights as established in 1641.
Fuck.
So
influence meant like he just won every time he went to play fucking roulette at the casino.
This is quite interesting. He became involved in two more significant financial ventures in October 1920. So roughly the time we're sort of in the series. Yeah. He became involved in the incorporation of a company that was to become BP.
Whoa, holy shit. Oh. And another one called Amazon.com. What?
He foresaw a great future in the oil business. Now,
wow,
I mean, but yeah, but Rockefeller was oil money, wasn't it? And that's so there must have been there were a lot of like oil. There's gold.
What colored gold is it?
Yeah, what did you say?
What did you call me?
What did you call me?
Did you call me black?
That's quite good, actually. Thanks. That's quite good, actually.
Yeah, it's for sure.
Sometimes racism is a compliment.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, like it was definitely because this was well before. Like in the 60s, they started doing a lot of stuff in the Middle East and stuff where there were like a lot of companies going over there and things like that. So like this is well before all of that, but this is still when there were plenty of oil reserves in the West where, you could, at least that's what the impression I'm getting is that there was a lot of, there was enough in the West that we didn't even have to go out, you know?
Yeah.
That's fucking mad.
He was really good friends, apparently. This is just a little nugget of extra Zaharoff goodness. He was really good friends with Sarah Bernhardt, the French stage actress.
What, so from King of Comedy?
He loved to be around Sandra. he obviously liked to be around celebrity.
Yeah, well, he was very much sort of like, that's why he's sort of like, I think Fleming hit upon him as like the archetype for this kind of like flamboyant supervillain, but also people don't really like, because Blofeld's a really interesting character because he's an independent, he doesn't work for a nation. So like back when like a lot of espionage fiction was Cold War based and it was East and West and the Brits versus the Soviets and all of that, Blofeld was like he was just a businessman who was operating independently, and that was quite unheard of at the time, but you can see why then it's quite inspirational as a character, because that's exactly what Zaharoff was doing.
Oh, yeah. This guy had no loyalty
to anyone.
Yeah.
But had sway over nations.
That's really wacky.
Like,
yeah.
Yes,
that's fucking
nuts.
Crazy.
It's nuts. Oh, God, he must have loved it. He was probably the happiest.
Yeah, I think that most evil billionaires are. That, isn't it?
Do you know what, Suze? I think if there was a film about him, we should call it The Happiest Billionaire.
The Happiest Billionaire.
The Happiest Billionaire. That's the Eddie Murphy one.
In my head, though, now...
It's got an animated credit
sequence. Oh, yes.
And the music is kind of a little bit Bernard Herrmann. It's like... It's kind of like...
Do you know why I thought that?
Edgy jazz sound.
The Happiest Billionaire is the same as like The Happiest Cat, which is the original scratchy cartoon, isn't it?
Oh, that's right. Yeah. That's right, yeah.
That's where that image came from.
That kind of 1920s Steamboat Willie-esque.
But apparently, Sarah Bernhardt's husband was Greek. Maybe that's how they
met. Knew each other.
Called Jacques Damala. Now, Damala had a mistress who gave birth to an illegitimate daughter by Damala while he was married to Sarah Bernhardt. Mm-hmm. The mistress left the baby and a note in a basket on Sarah Bernhardt's doorstep. So the baby was then given to Zaharoff, who found a family to raise her in Adrianople, which is was a city in Turkey. All the names changed, didn't they?
Were you about to say that baby?
And that who did it grow up to be?
Sandra Bernhardt.
Sandra Bernhardt. Name her after me. Sort of.
Well, it was born in 1889, so I think it grew up to be Hitler.
Wicked. Grew up to be a famous farmer.
Very, very famous. Great tomatoes.
Argentine
great tomatoes.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because it was 1933, wasn't it? He became
quite prominent.
Yeah.
So that meant
Yeah, he would have been in power while Zaharoff was still alive for 3 more years.
Whoa.
But if Zaharoff had had any influence still, imagine what would have happened. Like,
that's fucking crazy.
That has just sent a shudder.
Yeah, that's pretty fucked.
Because Zaharoff would have still been quite buddy with Churchill as well. And Zaharoff could have really... Mm. Like, what if then... That could have been... We never might have declared war.
Can you imagine?
And I know Chamberlain Prime Minister at the time.
Yeah.
But, like, if Zaharoff had the influence over the British government that he had had, and also had Hitler's ear as well, that would Britain and Germany ever have gone to war?
Well, there's money to be made, though, isn't there?
But also is there... There is money to be made, but wouldn't somebody else have also... Would we have been fighting on the side of Germany against... somebody else further down the line and that sort of thing, you know?
So it's like Europe versus US or something.
It doesn't bear thinking about.
It's pretty terrifying.
As insane. Oh my God.
This guy's a fucking trip, man.
Yeah, he is.
This is fucking crazy. Like a proper, just nestled right in the fucking middle of all of this crazy shit.
Yeah, so the thing about it as well is, don't you think that, because obviously a lot of conspiracy theories are bullshit.
Yes.
But here you've got a bloke who was able to influence governments.
So the thing about that is that, like, that...
Like, it feels unlikely, but was true.
I sort of only feel like there's only one real conspiracy, and it's like people like money. And people who like money like to hang on to it because it gives them power, or at least the perception of it. And that's it. That's the only real conspiracy, is that, like, if there's money to be made, people will find a way to make... that money, right? And that's kind of it. Like, all the other stuff of, like, oh, but they're doing it because, like, oh, well, they're, pick one. Weather machines, fucking Nazis in the center of the earth, whatever you want. Hollow moon. But there's no, it would cost too much money to do any of that stuff. So why would you do it? There's no reason to fucking hollow out the moon and put Nazis up there, because it costs too much money. So fuck that. Like, even the faked moon landing. It's like, why it would just send them up there. It's way cheaper to do that than it is to fucking fake it.
Yeah, than to shut everyone up who was involved.
That's the other thing as well, is like the amount of people you'd have to shut up to make sure that no one says anything. It's too, what's it I always say to somebody? Somebody said to me, they're like, you know when you read in the newspaper that somebody has an affair? And you're like, that's a conspiracy of two people. The people who fucked. Those are the only people who should know that the affair happened.
Mm.
How the hell does everyone else know about that? Right? If that happens, are you telling me that a governmental body, which is an office full of morons, because that's what every office is, is able to, like, pay off enough people? This country would be broke. There's no way. Right.
This country is broke.
I don't know if you've looked outside, Masood, but this country is fucked.
He had a moustache to twirl as well, so he could have...
Oh, he fucking did. Yeah. He did wear a cape, didn't he? I bet he wore a fucking cape.
He did wear a cape, yeah. Please Google it, because Sue said that she wouldn't shag him, but the jury's out on you, so...
How are we spelling that?
Okay, so it's Basil, obviously Basil. And then Zaharoff is Zaharoff.
Basil Zaharoff. Here we go. Let's see what Masood has to say about Basil Zaharoff.
Masood's like,
there's something about he's.
No, you're doing it. No,
what's it called? You sound like.
Are we looking at chocolate for ZZ?
I can't believe I'm the chocolate for Zed.
No!
That's fucking brilliant.
Oh my god. All these years later, we found out what he actually meant. That's horrendous. This is why Eddie Murphy stopped playing.
He was really into, and no one knew this, young black men. He really loved them. Chocolate
for Zed. Yeah.
I can dream, Suze. Don't take that from me.
He loved young guys. Like,
tempted to call this episode Chocolate for Zed.
He looks looks kind of like he's got a Freud, old Freud thing to him, which I quite, I quite enjoy, in a weird Germanic.
Masood, you don't want to have sex with this old.
Would you fuck old Basil Zara?
get on iTunes, leave us a review. One star or five
would
stars.
You,
we
would you have bang
them.
Zahara? Old Zahara.
We're going to be doing a Twitter poll on whether people would.
Can't believe I'm chocolate for ZZ. Yes, I like it very much. Yum yum. Chocolate for ZZ.
He just pushes Masood into the room and he starts going,
oh, please leave a wrapper on. I want to take Masood's it off. Like, chocolate for ZZ.
Like, just my luck. The only old evil guy that I don't find attractive. And then Masood goes,
he has lots of money. I'll be treated very well. You just see me like, but dressed up as like a 1920s floozy with the hat and like the little like netting over it.
Just... We see you. You're in like a fine carriage, eating like Turkish delight or something. Just like, I don't know what the fine delicacies were in the 1920s.
Hi, you two.
I'm off to the... And Masood's got a fluty accent. He's like, I'm off to the theatre now. Like when Barney dresses up as Marge and he goes in Simpsons dresses up as Marge and goes, I'm off to market and falls down the stairs.
I've sat there in the theatre with those little with the binoculars on a stick. You're like,
and he just suddenly sees Mark and Chris's face, it's really big. Whoop. And he goes, what? And we're just standing right.
We know what you're up to, Masood. What? Why me?
And Masood's going, Masood goes, shush, playing both sides. Like, you're not gonna tell her.
Also in this fantasy I've got like the lead powdered makeup with a little beauty spot that I've put on.
He's got all the
it's
ears.
Like centuries out of date.
Yeah, Masood, why are you doing this? That isn't the correct era, it's not the correct country. Oh, if you wouldn't mind, I'd be all right to watch the theatre.
He gets really angry about it as well. He's like, don't you, listen guys, don't you tell me how to drag race, all right?
Oh my, this has to be in the show.
And then he's like, ZZ's hide. Coming back, hide. And then and he's like, ooh, we're like, ooh, he calls him ZZ. And then he just sits down next to you and puts a proprietary arm around you. You snuggle in.
ZZ, why can't we be like this forever?
What are we doing?
And what are we doing?
But both of you are hid very poorly underneath our chairs.
We're like, and then later on we're like, right, let's confront him at his fine dwelling, and we go and knock on the door of the mansion that you're in, and you come to the door and we're like, oh,
Masood's in a robe.
I was gonna say
Yeah, he's still got all the makeup.
I was gonna say a night dress.
Like a boot dress.
Like a flowing night dress.
It's yeah, but not like a sexy like one. Like just a weird long cotton nightie. Yeah, like a mum would have. And we go, Masood, have you been kissing ZZ? And Masood goes, no. And then ZZ comes to the door, he's got all makeup all over.
Who is it? Beard. Who is it, chocolate?
Who is it? Who is it? Who is it, chocolate? Nobody, ZZ. Go back to bed.
I gotta go. Okay, I'll talk to you tomorrow.
I'm playing both sides. This is the most horrible scenario we've ever done.
Well, to be honest, actually, I think I've I think my faith in this series has been rekindled.
Since we were going, it will be a wacky movie starring Eddie Murphy, and then we've like, no, but it will be a
provided.
Wacky comedy.
I think my faith in this series is restored, provided that. Like Almonds and Champagne with the Hollywood series, our running joke this time is Masood as a femme fatale.
Oh, and absolutely.
In every single one.
Absolutely. As long as in the next photo shoot I can drape myself across a piano, then I'm I'm into it 100%.
I have access to a piano.
Let's do it.
This.
Absolutely. I'll shave my legs.
I'm like, oh, Masood, wouldn't it be funny? Do you want to borrow one of my sequin dresses?
Shows up in one.
Like, no need. Shows up with a rack of them. Let's see. Guys, which one? Zed loves me in this. Like, why are you saying it like it's real, Masood?
Chocolate!
Zed loves his chocolate in this rack.
I'm hungry!
It's disgusting.
It turns out the thing that was driving him to make more money was like his love for Masood.
He just wanted to buy Masood nice things.
So
nice
much.
Things.
Yeah. And Masood's like, he goes, chocolate, would you come and live with me forever? And he's like, depends how much money you got. I'm a bit of a clothes horse.
How about this one? I'm not some cheap floozy you can just buy off.
You can't palm me off with an 80 grand necklace. You slap him.
One night, Masood is like, I'm not in the mood, Zed said. I sent the world to war.
I sent the world to war for my
Masood's
chocolate.
Like, and Masood goes, say it again.
I engineered worldwide conflict.
For my chocolate.
What are we doing? I did it for my chocolate.
Oh my goodness.
If we get fucking cancelled for this great movie that we've created, I'll be furious. I'll be like, of all the things I've said, it's this.
I mean, we've said it too much now that if we were to cut out chocolate for ZZ, the episode would be too short.
It would be...
So I'm sorry, guys. Time constraints mean we've got to keep chocolate for ZZ in.
It's got to stay.
It's got to stay.
Oh my goodness. Oh, what an episode. Well, there it is. You have it, guys.
Wow.
Chocolate for ZZ.
The most evil man who ever lived.
The Merchant of Death.
The most disgusting movie ever made.
Oh my goodness.
So all that's left is, I guess, this song from the movie Chocolate for ZZ.
Songs are back.
Yeah, songs are back. Oh, all because God. Of our imaginations and what really happened.
Zagarov, Zagarov, when war comes you love it. Zagarov, Zagarov, submarines that fire rockets. Oh, Basil, $1 million in your pocket. Ooh, Zagarov, hungry for chocolate. Oh, Basil, what's it all for? Why do you love war? Basil Zagarov, it's not even funny. Is it your only vice? That thing they call money. Oh, Basil Zagarov, got the ear of world leaders. On the battlefield, you cause millions of bleeders. Hitler nearly was your biggest cheerleader. Your favorite thing is money, right? Or did you mislead us? Zagarov, Zagarov, what do you need? Zagarov, Zagarov, you make my heart bleed. Ooh, Basil, Basil, you need a treat. What makes this chocolate so goddamn sweet? I see that you've retired to bed. Ooh, Zagarov, Zagarov, so many dead. And all you want is chocolate for ZZ.
What a track.
Wow.
What a
treat for the ears and brain.
Oh, wow. Oh, well. Wow. You can find us in all the usual places on Instagram.
IMDb.
Chocolate for ZZ starring Masood Maas.
Friends United.
I'm on the Twitter. Doctor Who forums a lot.
On Instagram. I'm skulking Reddit. Yeah, in all the usual places, on Twitter and Instagram.
I used to be on a Chris Moyles fan forum.
Oh, really? How? Yeah. Wow.
Were you?
Yeah, if, yeah, I'd like laugh about the Radio 1 show on the fan forums, Chris Moyles.
Aww.
It's unofficial.
Yeah, I doubt he would.
I think I'd get on really well with Comedy Dave, actually.
But, like, I'm saying that, like, when I was 13,
yeah.
I was in my mid-20s.
Oh, dear.
Oh.
Yeah. What is wrong with me? It's pre-Twitter. It's probably, like, 2005. No, so I was 20. I wasn't on there very long. Cut all that. Leave chocolate for Zeds everywhere.
Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and Patreon.
Yes, we've got Patreon. All of the stuff we can't put in the episode. And you're like, you can't put that? Please go there.
Exactly,
it helps us keep the lights on in this pub. Thanks so much for everything, for listening and all that jazz.
Jazz.
Chocolate for Zed.
Zed.
I want my chocolate.
Oh, this is horrible. Oh, man.
We're going to say bye now, everybody.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye.
Give me my chocolate.
Catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.